Right now we're going to talk with Dr. Paul Kanger of Grove City College, who's a best-selling author. He's also a columnist, and we're going to talk about the current political situation. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Dr. Paul Kanger, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Always good to be with you, Jerry. Thanks.
Sure. Well, this has been an astounding turn of events as far as the politics in current America. Let me go ahead and timestamp this discussion. You and I are talking on January 14th, 2021, in the year of our Lord, 2021, in the afternoon. Crazy event. The Republicans lost the White House. The House, they did not regain the House, and we lost the Senate, just barely. Your comments on the recent election and the turn of events.
Yeah, I think, Jerry, one of the most shocking things about it is the Senate loss, and especially because of the fact that Georgia not only now has two Democrat senators, but two really hard left Democrat senators. I mean, it'd be one thing if, you know, maybe they elected somebody along the lines of a Jimmy Carter, born again Christian, right? You know, latter 1970s, but somebody who, you know, would have been considered back then to be more of a moderate Southern Democrat, or if it would have been maybe like, you know, late 1980s kind of Bill Clinton figure who was considered at least to be at one point a sort of a moderate Democrat. But to have Ossoff and Warnock, who are two hard left individuals, is really very shocking. And also too, to have seen Georgia go for the Democrat, Joe Biden of all things. But Georgia is looking more and more like a state like Illinois that's controlled by Chicago. Georgia is, you know, heavily influenced by Atlanta. You know, Pennsylvania heavily controlled by Philadelphia and other states like that. So that's part of it. And also too, to be totally frank here, Jerry, I saw that when Georgia was doing mail-in ballots, I said, that's it. The Republicans are going to lose it. Because mail-in ballots are absolutely so open for abuse and exploitation and corruption and all kinds of things to go wrong.
You know, one big question that I've often said in my columns and et cetera, and long before the 2020 election, but it's this. If the left is so great, why did they so often have to cheat to win elections? Do you think there was any cheating in the 2020 election?
Well, I think what I saw in Pennsylvania, and I mean, look, there's always cheating in all of these elections, and it's more a matter of, you know, would it have been enough to swing, you know, certain key states? I mean, I'll say this. I'll speak for Pennsylvania because I know Pennsylvania up and down. It's my home state. I know it very well. What happened in Pennsylvania, the fact that there ended up being 3.5 million votes, 3.5 million ballots that were sent out as mail-ins is absolutely astounding. And of those 3.5 million, there was almost like a 90% return rate on those ballots, which is also just you know, over the charts, over the moon. I mean, it's shocking that you can have numbers like that. And the night of the election, we were watching it very closely in Pennsylvania, when Donald Trump was leading Joe Biden by 58% to 41% and by about 600,000 votes. You know, we were running the math. We were doing the numbers, and we had heard that Pennsylvania had sent out maybe 1 to 2 million mail-in ballots, you know, upwards of 1.8 million. And we said, oh, well, there's no way then that Donald Trump can lose Pennsylvania. Even if those ballots skew Democrat. Biden can't catch them with that. But if there ended up being 3.5 million sent out and over 3 million of those actually sent back in,
wow.
Well, then it's more possible. But even then, it's very difficult. So, but you know, mail-in balloting, it's just, I talked to people who, I'm not making this up. I talked to a guy 2 days ago who told me that he received six ballots at his house. six ballots at his house.
And if this was, and wait, when, and when let me stop. If this guy was an unethical person and he filled out every one of those ballots and then voted, you know, they should have, five of them should have been thrown out. Actually, I think all of them should have been thrown out if he's going to cheat like that. But in many cases, it seems like some of these things were counted.
Right. Well, and he was quite angry because he said that he was so frustrated when he got all those ballots. So he went in and he voted in person instead. Did they ask for an ID? I can't remember if they did, but he didn't have to provide his signature. And he was angry at the person. He said, listen, I should have to show you my ID and I should have to put my signature on here. And they let him skate. They didn't even ask for it. Now in my little town, at least I had to show ID and I had to put my signature there, and they know who I am, but they asked me for ID anyway. But the problem with mail-in ballots is you can't confirm any of this stuff. So you could have people voting multiple times, or you could have one person getting a hold of multiple ballots and filling them all out. And by the way, this is why I think the number is 65% of the countries in the European Union don't do mail-in balloting. They ban it because they know that it's just rife with opportunities for fraud. And the way all this happened in Pennsylvania was the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court, five Democrats and two Republicans on a 5-2 party line vote. It was the five Democrats on the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court that took into its own power the right to define Pennsylvania's election laws and do all this mail-in stuff, including the date received, when they could become in, changing all these rules, making all these rules. And all of that is the exclusive province of the Pennsylvania legislature. The court's not allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. The court is constitutionally not allowed to do that. And this is something that the Trump administration challenged, that the state of Texas challenged, that Ted Cruz and others challenged, and then when it went back to the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court, the judges there basically laughed at the Trump people, told them they were too late to file the complaint. They called it latches, whatever that is, latches, right? The infamous latches, whatever latches is. It became a comedy, a farce. The whole thing did. Which is why so many people in Pennsylvania are upset. And Donald Trump should not have lost Pennsylvania. And frankly, I find it really, really, really hard to imagine that he did.
Hmm. Well, and what's so frustrating then, on January 6th, last Wednesday, the infamous day, he has this huge rally, and he even used the word peacefully, you know, go down to Congress and, you know, whatever. I don't think he said to go in there, but go to them and, you know, express your concern about this, but do this all peacefully. Meanwhile, I saw a timeline of the people that went into the Capitol, and it looks as if several of them went in before the president was even finished his speech. So, and it was about 25 minutes to walk from where he was giving the speech to the Capitol, and already there were people in the Capitol before he was even finished. So there's some, you know, just a lot of questions about this whole thing. And now they're making it out like, you know, Trump basically said, okay, everybody grab your pitchforks and we're going to go down there and scale the walls and, you know, open the Bastille.
Yeah. So as far as the idea that Donald Trump incited this, I mean, look, I don't know exactly how many people were there at the rally. I've seen numbers 30,000, 45,000. A guy from Illinois who went there and who's an expert on this kind of thing, estimating crowd sizes, told me he thought there were 80,000. A friend of mine who's been at inaugurals and other events, he thinks there might have been 200,000. I don't know. But let's say at the very least, I think everybody agrees there were tens of thousands. Now, the number of people that actually went inside the Capitol building, I don't know, Jerry. Do you even know how many? I don't know.
I heard it was 170. 200? I heard it was 170 people that they were looking for. So 170 people that they were looking at as lawbreakers.
So let's take the absolute lowest number that I've heard of the rally crowd size, 30,000. Okay? That means that about 29,000 not only didn't go inside, but if the president was inciting an insurrection, an invasion of the Capitol building, he did a pretty poor job of inciting, because he didn't convince 29,900 of them to go in.
Yeah.
Right? That's a pretty hard argument to make, which gets back to this absolute disgrace of an impeachment vote on Tuesday. Because of all things, you talk about a constitutional farce. The idea that you could impeach a president without any hearings, without a formal investigation, without witnesses, without the president's lawyers being present, without anybody there to cross-examine or question or ask anything to, it's just absolutely outrageous. To say that this wasn't due process is an understatement. This is the most political, partisan impeachment escapade in American history.
Escapade.
And if Democrats and liberals weren't so emotional and partisan about stuff, they'd be ashamed of this. I had a friend who emailed me yesterday, who's an academic, and he was actually very angry at Trump about what happened at the Capitol. He's a Republican, but he doesn't really like Trump. He was angry at what happened at the Capitol building. He partly blamed Donald Trump for it, but he emailed me yesterday, Jerry, and he told me, he said, the way the Democrats are overplaying this and running with this and exaggerating with it and using this to censure people, to cancel people, to do an impeachment vote, he said, these guys better be careful. They're going to make a martyr out of Donald Trump before this is all over. And I can tell you, in the span of about a week, my email box has switched from conservatives who were very angry about what happened at the Capitol, and many of them angry at Donald Trump, to now conservatives who are just enraged at the Democrats and the liberals and how they're doing with this. I wrote a piece for American Spectator quoting liberals, Democrats, comparing it to 9/11,
Kristallnacht.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's a Republican, compared it to Kristallnacht.
Yeah.
Right. The night of the broken glass. Others comparing it to the Holocaust. I quote a professor from the University of Texas at Austin calling the Republican leadership Al-Qaeda over this. The Republican leadership. That'd be Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell. This guy wasn't even saying this about the people who went in the building. He called the Republican leadership a white supremacist Al-Qaeda. Right? Wow. I mean, you talk about losing it the way that they are, overplaying their hands. So I can go on and on. I got an email from a student who told me, he said, I'm afraid of accepting a job that was just offered to me. This was a place, Jerry, where he had interned the previous summer, so he knows the place well. He said, this office and my floor is filled with liberals. And I'm afraid that if they find out that I'm a Republican who voted for Trump and have a MAGA hat in my home, and they could probably find pictures of me with that MAGA hat on Facebook, this kid said, I'm afraid if that happens, I'm going to get harassed. I'm going to get abused. And that's where we are now. The liberals are going so wild with this that it's going to backfire in their faces. And also, the party in power always loses seats in midterm elections. If they're not careful, man, 2022, they're going to get really hammered. The Democrats are in the midterms.
All right, we have 30 seconds to wrap up. Does Trump have any kind of political future after all this?
I don't think he does, but I'm very fearful of a repeat in 2024 of 2016, where you have a Republican primary with a bunch of candidates. And because Donald Trump has a committed 20-30%, he divides the field again. But this really ought to be the end of Trump pursuing the presidency. Even if he was dealt a bad hand and treated unfairly and all that stuff, if you want to make that argument, he should still move on. It's time to pass the torch here to the next generation and. For younger conservatives to get into power.
Dr. Paul Kanger, faithandfreedom.com for more information. Thanks so much for being with us, Paul. All the best.
All right, Jerry. Anytime. Take care.
Okay, you too. Thanks. Bye-bye.